Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
Hey y'all, I'm Shelly Hennig.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Back to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. This is the first podcast that will actually be discussing new Teen Wolf content since the show's finale in September 2017. I'm Natalie. My co-host Karen is here with me today to give you our first reactions to the Teen Wolf movie, which came out on January the 26th on Paramount Plus. So this is going to be a pretty raw episode where we really are just going to be like yelling at each other about the movie. We don't have a document or a script. Usually we have talking points that we have planned and we can move through quite smoothly. That's not what's happening today.
I feel so very naked without
a Teen Wolf naked. Naked wolf.
I mean, that
which is very appropriate for this movie.
Yes,
we are Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. If you are just getting on the Teen Wolf train because of the movie, we were the first ever Teen Wolf podcast on the internet, launched back in season 2 of Teen Wolf. We have been podcasting about Teen Wolf until it finished, and we have been continuing to work on other things. And now that the Teen Wolf movie is here, we have been back posting about it since the, you know, arrival of the Teen Wolf movie news. So, yeah, we are a Teen Wolf podcast. We are going to also be covering the new Jeff Davis Teen Wolf show, Wolf Pack, which is not a Teen Wolf show, but it is a wolf teen show.
Yes.
It's not a Teen Wolf. It's not a spin-off. It's a wolf teen show. That premiered today as well, so you can check out our coverage of that on Subjectify Media, our home website as well. Before we get right into it, we definitely want to hear everyone's reactions to the movie. Sorry that we're not able to read any out on this episode. We did have an advanced screener of the movie, so we are recording this in advance of the movie coming out so we can drop it the second that it comes out. We will be doing another episode down the line, probably do quite a few episodes of different elements of the movie, but we're going to be doing one, you know, that is talking about feedback, like people, we're going to get as much feedback from listeners as possible about things they thought about the movie, or asking them, asking us questions about what we thought about the movie, and go through that kind of thing as well. So if you want to yell at us about the Teen Wolf movie, please do that, because we will be wanting to incorporate as many questions from Teen Wolf fans and listeners into another episode where we just are like, this person has said this. What do you think about this, Karen? So, yeah, you can do that on our Twitter, which is NATWpodcast. You can email us at natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can go on Tumblr to notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com and send us an ask. We also have an Instagram and a Facebook. I guess you could DM us on Instagram if you've stopped using Twitter. It's NATW Podcast on Instagram as well. If Facebook is your real first method of contact, you can find us on the Subjectify Media Facebook and you can send us a message there. I think there's a Teen Wolf Facebook. I genuinely can't remember what it is at this very second. So, and I don't have a document in front of me, so that's fine. Twitter, Gmail, Instagram, all NATW Podcast. Tumblr, Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. So, Karen, we are here to talk about the Teen Wolf movie, Teen Wolf the movie, as it officially is called.
Yes.
You said you feel naked and scared. You feel scared.
Yes, naked and afraid.
Yeah. That is something that has happened to at least one character in the Teen Wolf movie. Okay, so jumping straight in, doesn't have to be in order. Why don't we talk about the butts?
Yeah, let's just talk about the butts.
Okay, so when I was watching the Teen Wolf movie, Karen, I was not expecting there to be the naked butts of at least three beloved cast members.
Yep.
I was just not prepared for the nudity. It wasn't full frontal, but it was full backle, and I was not...
It's a little bit of side boob.
I was just really stunned by this. Is this something that you were expecting in the movie?
Well, prior to you telling me about it,
I did tell you in advance. I was
you
like,
did
okay.
Warn me.
The and, only spoiler, but, I was like, there's a lot.
Yeah, but it still took me by surprise, especially like Malia running through naked, because you get a whole side profile of her. And I was like, oh, we're doing this. And then you get the close up of Parrish's butt. I feel like Allison's was a little more, it kind of made sense. Although the fact that she came out completely naked, but with painted red nails kind of makes me laugh. But that aside, like for her, like I kind of get that she was being reconstituted. The other two, I was like, oh yeah, we're doing butts now.
It's interesting because I think that, you know, Malia in particular, it's like, okay, so Teen Wolf has definitely had, you know, it's had sex scenes and it's had implied nudity. Like, you know, Malia has been implied naked before with her transformations and, you know, we've had people in bed. We've had like, you know, PG, you know, vaguely 15 plus sex scenes. I still wasn't expecting the butts. And if I was, I was probably going to expect it to be Posey's butt because he doesn't care. I don't know. I was just like, you know, the Allison arriving on the Nematon, which we'll get to, I definitely, you know, I understand that she in reality would be naked. But obviously Teen Wolf before wouldn't have shot it like this. They would have hidden it. So, yeah, that was a big surprise, to be honest.
Malia being naked made sense, you know? Like, it didn't feel gratuitous to me. Like, it was shocking, but, like, Malia is the kind of person, the kind of were-coyote that's going to just be naked whenever she can.
Yeah, I do think that that's interesting, and also that, you know, she's still kind of a bit like that after all that time. But, you know, they didn't have to show it, which is fine that they did. It's just interesting to me they took that opportunity. I wasn't so much expecting it. I did know in advance because I think they kind of teased it in the show. There was an interview where I think someone was like, can we say this swear word? And Jeff was like, yeah, we say it in the movie, which was motherfucker. There was a lot of like high level swearing in the movie as well. So those two things were quite interesting. If I had to pick one to keep, it would probably be the swearing. I don't care that much either way about the butts. I just was like, I kind of laughed because as well, we know, you know, Shelley and Ryan, they were like, Shelley was very like, oh, I don't want to have this romance because she doesn't feel that way about the person at all. She feels like too brotherly with him, which is Ryan Kelly. And it's not just sexy make it out. It's she had to grab his butt.
Yeah.
She must be so embarrassed. Whereas swearing, for me, in a way, took a level of, like, we talked about this a bit in the preview episode because we knew there was going to be swearing. We've spoken before about, I guess, like, these people would naturally swear, and on a TV show, you know, a lot of TV shows, people who naturally swear don't swear because of the ratings, and so it feels a bit like there's, like, a veil between you and the show, like, this isn't actually the real way these people would talk in the most authentic versions of the characters. With these characters, I think that, you know, this was a good level of, like, maybe, and you know, looking through the veil at how these characters really would talk. So the swearing was fun. Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird thing to focus on. We're adults. Who cares? But it was a change from the original Teen Wolf.
Right.
Were you expecting Chris Argent to yell motherfucker multiple times?
I wasn't. No, not at all. I think from the kids, I, you know, like you said, I kind of expected it, and I'm totally good with it because I think that when you're seeing the things that they see, like, of course they're going to be like, fuck, fuck, fuck. Like, you know, this is so scary shit. And it really worked for me. But yeah, that moment from Chris was a little surprising, but yeah. I still liked it all.
Yeah. It's almost like a lot of the stuff in the original series, especially with Styles going like, ah, would have actually in reality him just being going like, fuck, 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 like that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was cool. It was cool with me, but it was just, you know, yeah, we're definitely going to Adult Wolf in terms of, ratings as well as age. So that was funny. I guess we can jump from that into, I mean, yeah, like I said, we don't really have a guide, so we're just going where the conversation takes us. Butts and swearing. We can go back to the basics, which is like, obviously the movie is starting with Scott and, well, no, actually the movie doesn't open on Scott. It opens on Liam, which kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
So basically, I guess like, how did you feel when you're about to watch the movie and then you saw the opening?
I was definitely intrigued and excited, you know, obviously confused. You're meant to be. You don't really know what exactly is going on with them. And I thought that it was kind of like an opening to a Western movie, which I really enjoyed. You have the bad guy strolling through the doors, and instead of a saloon, it's a ramen shop. And seeing Liam, you know, he looks so much more grown up now. And then we also meet Hikari, which I'll just say right now, like, I was super bummed she wasn't in more of the movie because I really, really liked her. And I think that, like, where she pretends she doesn't understand English and she's all like sweet and nice. And then her face drops and she's like, yeah, you know, I don't know what you're talking about or whatever. Like, I really liked that switch there. And then when the whole room pulls out their guns, I'm like, what are these two into? What is Liam? Like, who is he friends with over here? So that was interesting.
I really got chills when Liam was the one to like answer the question, like the when is a door not a door, when it's a jar. I was like, oh fuck, we are going like I wasn't. We obviously knew that the Nagitsune had a role to play. I will say, like, this movie is basically a sequel to season 3.
Yeah,
it's not. It's very much like I was not really prepared for like how much season 3 would like I feel like I should have watched season 3 before watching the movie, like directly before it.
I kind of agree,
which is fine, and season 3 is obviously like one of the best runs of Teen Wolf ever, but it was definitely like very closely marrying to that plot. The fact that Liam has the Nagitsune jar, like that he's been tasked with protecting it with Hikari, a lot of unanswered questions throughout the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Probably too many unanswered questions for me to be properly satisfied if this was everything that we got.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest, like, I feel like the entire movie was, like, we know that it, like, definitely ran long, like, that the first cut was probably much longer than this. And it kind of felt like there was so much stuff that they had to fill in that they cut down to, like, the first cut must have been super long, and then they cut it and they cut it and they cut it to get like, okay, what's the shortest we can get it to be that still explains like the current plot? And I think like a lot of what got lost was like the context of how some of these people got to these places. It almost feels like there needs to be like another season, not after the movie, but before the movie.
Yeah.
It does feel like there's like a setup of a lot of characters, but like, let's talk about Hikari and Liam for a second. So one thing I was absolutely shocked by, I kind of was like, okay, we're focusing in the moment because once the events of the movie starts, it's one of those classic Teen Wolf episodes where a massive, like, we've had Teen Wolf seasons where the whole events of the seasons happens over like a few days.
Yeah.
It was like that. It was like this movie did not cover a long period of time. It covered an incredibly short period of time. Because of that, so much context is not actually given a chance to explain. But Liam and Hikari, when they end up back in Beacon Hills, everyone knows Hikari already. She's not like a new person. They know she's Liam's partner, and they seem to know they live in Japan. My theory is that Hikari is an ally that the group made when they were traveling around the world hunting Monroe.
Ooh, okay.
Like that she's someone along the way that was joined into that hunters versus monsters fight. We don't know anything about how that ended at all. That is not in the movie. And that absolutely shocked me. But I understand that they were focusing on here and now, but there's a lot
of time. I'm surprised there wasn't even a mention of it.
Not even a mention. And, like, I feel like that has to be the reason that people are scattered. Like, as in, like, it's not just, like, Scott left Beacon Hills at the end of the series and he's been burnt out and hasn't been back in a long time. It's that, like, whatever happened after the Teen Wolf series is what burnt the people out and scattered them. And we didn't see that and we didn't hear about the results of it. It was not a factor in the film. But my theory is that's where Hikari came into the fold, that she was someone along the way when they were, like, going out around the world doing their war, and that Hikari and Liam met that way because they're clearly an established relationship. So, yeah, that is my theory.
I like it.
Yeah, so the fact that Liam had the Nagitsune jar to protect in his shop means that, you know, the Hikari's shop must be like a base for kind of, I think probably like a bit of like a people in that world know that she's a bit of a source for things and stuff. But did you have any suspicion when the person came in wanting to take the Nagitsune who it might be?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. How did you feel about the end reveal of who it was?
I still don't know how I feel about it. Like, obviously, I love it because we've talked about him so much. And, like, when I realized what might be going on, I remember messaging you and being like, I can't even think about this theory because if I think about it, then...
And is that who you thought it was in the theory?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to handle it because we had so many
conversations. I thought maybe it might be Matt and then you would lose it even more. But yeah. This makes sense. But this... made more sense because of, again, it's all the season three. It's the kind of like you know, tying into that fire. Like, I will say the stuff that's not explained, there's so much of it, and I'm not that happy about some of the stuff that wasn't explained. The stuff that they did work in is almost like too convoluted for people, but it's like the fire formula, like that he gave to Kate, like the fact that they were able to identify, like, later on, they're like, there's only, you know, this formula was invented by someone who's meant to be dead. That was him. That was part of that plot when they discovered that he gave that formula to Kate. So the fact that he invented that formula and that they were like, oh, that guy's meant to be dead. I mean, we also don't know how he came to be not dead, but never mind, I guess. Yeah. Did we find out how he came to not be dead?
No. Obviously, he has that gigantic scar across his neck,
from
which
being,
like,
strangulated.
Yeah, so like we saw that in the show, but we never saw a body. It's possible somebody found him and he was rescued.
I think that the important thing with this is that, like, the backstory is here, for example, the backstory of being Mr. Harris, whether that is impactful for people or not, is proof that the consideration of, like, how things tied together was quite tight. Like, in terms of, like, so that's why I get the feeling that all of these unanswered questions the movie doesn't answer are things that, like, if you went and asked Jeff or the other guys that worked on the script, they would know all of the answers, and it was just that it all got cut back, which is very annoying to me because I think that, you know, if it was going to be that long, let's do a 4-episode miniseries that just has all of the information, because I would have liked probably less plot and more backstory. To be honest, it felt like there was a lot of plot and some of it was like, it was all tied together, but it was interesting. So the main thrust of the plot, again, this is sort of not, we're not going in order through the movie, but the main thrust of the plot was like Mr. Harris, for some reason, becomes allied with the Nagitsune. The Nagitsune is calling to him to set him free. Or maybe it's that it's all driven by Mr. Harris and he was like, hey, here's a way to fuck with Scott. He goes and gets the Nagitsune and he kind of takes the Nagitsune and sets it free. And they are working to fuck with Scott, basically, in any way possible. This took me a minute to understand what was happening in a later scene. But what effectively happens is that the Nagitsune goes out and possesses Chris Argent, who goes to Scott and is like, we've got to raise Allison from the dead. What is interesting to me is, and then later you kind of learn that he was doing this under the possession of the Nagitsune because our best friend, an enemy, Deaton, comes and he riddles the Nagitsune out of Chris. He doesn't believe that the whole raising Allison from the dead thing is in earnest, and he's right because he riddles the Nagitsune out. I wanted to ask, did you get this on the first viewing? Did you get that this? Because I actually spoke to someone who was at the premiere of the movie and they did not get this.
Mm.
Did you follow that this was what was going on, that the raising of Allison was part of the chaos? It wasn't just a coincidence. She wasn't really in the veil calling to them.
No, the first time I watched it, no. The second time I did realize what had actually been going on with Chris.
Yeah. So ultimately, we've got, you know, Chris coming to Scott, or, you know, different people giving the... It actually reminds me of something that... there's a part in Supernatural, in later seasons of Supernatural, where Lucifer is calling through the cage, like, he's pretending to be someone else, and he kind of makes the guys think that someone else needs rescuing from hell, but it's actually him that they set free. So it reminded me of that a little bit. Ultimately, this does get lost, and again, I think this is like they had to cut some explainers down to like the barest minimum, because there's no scene later where they sit down and say, oh shit, we shouldn't have raised Allison from the dead. That was just a plot from chaos to fuck with us. You know, it does come up again at the end where he was like, this is the game that you wanted, right? You know, he you know, Scott makes that a bit more clear when he's facing off with the Nagitsune and
mm-hmm.
being like, what you wanted is to create the circumstance where Allison kills me. The plot is there, but I feel like there's one or two scenes that could have been added that made people get exactly what was going on, because someone at the movie said they didn't follow it. For a second, I really wanted it to be that the Nagitsune was possessing Deaton because I hate him so much. But, you know, even when he was riddling it out of Chris Argent, he seemed very evil. But
I gotta say, I feel like he was the most useful during this movie than he ever has been in the series.
Yeah. So Scott and Chris raise Allison from the dead. We never get a scene of Chris unpossessed being like, oh my god, I would never do that, you know. But ultimately, for some reason, the Nagitsune has this information of how to raise Allison, which is kind of interesting and druidy and stuff. And he sets off this chain of events of Scott bringing Allison back from the dead in order to play his game of revenge with Scott. Do you think the game of revenge with Scott is driven by the Nagitsune or by Harris?
I do feel like Harris pointed the Nagitsune in the direction of Scott. But that being said, I feel like the Nagitsune had plenty of reason to want to go after Scott as well. Like, at first, I think he was just looking to get free and cause chaos, because that's what he does. And
yeah, I think he's amoral.
I think if he was doing that across Japan, then, like, he would have been totally content with that. But I think with Harris pointing him in the right direction, he was also like, oh, yeah, I do remember everything
this guy put me through. Fucked me over last time.
Yeah.
and Harris obviously has that human vendetta. But, yeah, it does make sense. I just think that it probably would have made more sense if this was four episodes of the miniseries where people had a few more conversations. That being said, the fact that Allison was raised from the dead and stays alive and happy at the end, sorry, but I think she should have died again. I do.
Really?
I think because it was an unbalanced resurrection. Like I was talking about in the preview episode, this is like, I was dead and I'm not meant to be alive. And even the raising of her was wrong. It was morally wrong. It was done by the false pretenses of an evil person. I feel like story-wise, balance-wise, it should have ended with her dying again.
But the her being stuck was still true.
No, it wasn't.
So the Nagitsune also gave Lydia, like, false visions?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. That's what I took. I might be wrong. Again, we might talk to Jeff and he'll be like, no. But to me, I took it as the whole thing was fabricated. Kind of like them bringing Buffy back. Like they were like, oh, she must be in hell. She must be in hell. Yeah, I took the whole thing as fake.
Because I could totally understand, like, obviously, if the Nagitsune was possessing Chris, then, like, everything he said is false. I could see Scott's visions of Allison being false because that's what the Nagitsune does. But I would be surprised if that crossed over into Lydia's powers.
Who says it was Lydia's powers? It could have just been the Nagitsune falsifying something that made her think that. I think that's probably the big question about whether Allison should live or die, whether she really was stuck or whether that was part of the Nagitsune's fake out, but I thought it was part of the fake out.
Yeah.
Anyway, she lived. Derek died. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. I do. But I did like our meeting with Scott, and I felt like quite gratified that I was right in terms of him being like a specialist that comes in, except instead of being a specialist for human rescue, he's a specialist for animal rescue.
Yeah.
How cute.
That is really cute. And he owns his own clinic. I mean, that was something that he wanted to work toward in the series.
Yeah. It's so interesting that him and Deaton are still like partners. Like he runs the animal shelter at the vet. And he has, you know, his dedication to animals and the fact that they're not scared of him anymore and that they love him when the werewolf powers first made him a bit scary to animals, that was good too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, him rescuing this dog and a little girl was, you know, it was really, really nice for him, except that we don't know why he's, like, alone and depressed with only Deaton for company. I assume the events of the war with Monroe. What did you think when they made that little crack about, like, there's still time about him having kids?
I thought, well, before you get to the end, like, in the beginning, I was like, oh, haha, that's kind of funny. That's not what Deaton meant at all. But then, like, the earnestness in Scott's face, like, really kind of took me by surprise, but also not, because I feel like he would be a good dad. But, like, you know, I still think of him as a teenager, and it's very much like reminding us that he's not. And I love that that's something that he had kind of been thinking about. And then you come full circle to the end of the movie where, like, he's like, yeah, I'm totally going to adopt Eli at some point, like when he's ready for it. And I was like, wow, like, this is something that he's ready for. And I really liked that for him.
I have some thoughts about Eli and Scott. I don't think that they should have taken him out of his hometown to LA. Like, I think it is insane if he has quote unquote adopted Eli. I mean, for starters, I don't think Derek should have died. I think that is a horrible thing to do to the child. Like, that hadn't. It's a very typical trope, I guess, for someone to have a disconnect with their parent and then only like really see them for the first time when the parent dies. Mm-hmm. That is a very big thing in stories, but I did not like it.
The thing I liked less than that was that he died in a fire.
Yeah. Let's just hang on to that for a second because there's also other elements of it that are very frustrating because like, we don't know who Eli's mother is. We don't know why he's not living with his mother. And the timeline of the movie, we talked a lot about the timeline, like who is this kid? When was he born? What is, how far ahead is it? Jeff said 2026, but that doesn't work. The movie repeats several times that it is 15 years, not since the end of the series, but 15 years since Allison died. So that is the end of season 3, which is like end of 2011. So not even the rest of the series. Allison died in late 2011. So this is 15 years from that, 2026. That works. But that means that Eli was conceived and born during the events of Teen Wolf, not with Brayden, who Derek dated in season 4, but like after Jennifer Blake and before Brayden. Who is his mother and where is she? When did Derek father a child that he never talked to anyone about and apparently had the kids since he was 3? Like, you know, Scott says, I haven't seen you since you were like 3. That would have been the end of Teen Wolf, the series. Derek would have already been a parent. Was this an error? Did they forget the timeline? Because they seem to have done a lot of research. Even, I will say, like, off the bat, even when we saw Jeff at Comic-Con, we didn't, like, do an official interview, but we talked to him a little bit. And I was like, this kid, like, I don't get it. Like, when was he meant to have been born? And he said the only thing he told me about the movie, he said, I know exactly when he was born. And I'm like, when? Because the movie did not tell me. And I'm so curious about what that circumstance is. Who, maybe it's like someone casual that Derek slept with who had the baby on her own and Derek only got the baby a few years later. but I am very confused.
I was surprised that they didn't even mention his mom, like not even giving us her identity, but like anything about his mom, which I really hope that there's a way to, and you know, if we do get a sequel movie, Eli is literally the Teen Wolf now, and I'm curious if he will have to go on his own sort of journey, and if the mother will come into play with that. Is the mother human? Is the mother a werewolf? Is she something else? We don't know. And yeah, I mean, it's very possible that they messed up the timeline. They forgot some canon, something like that, because as Jeff has said before, he's not a huge canon traditionalist. He doesn't mind changing the scope of a story in order to tell a good story, which for somebody like us, you know, who loves to analyze stuff and really like figure it out on our own and put things together and try to fill in blanks that the show hasn't provided us, that's very frustrating.
Yeah, ultimately, if it was really 15 years since Allison died, like exactly, then Eli was born somewhere around season 3 of Teen Wolf. If it's actually like 17 years since she died and they're just ballparking 15, then he could have been born either right when Derek was in South America or like in the gap between when he was away or whatever. But the fact they kept saying, he's 15, 15 years since Allison died, her death has a timeline. And I don't know if, you know, no matter how you kind of fudge, oh, did we fuck up the timelines? The year level doesn't matter. It's the fact that she died mid-series and he was born the same amount of years ago that she died. I don't think they're connected. I don't think it's like, oh, it's Kate's baby or something like that. Ugh. But
that would be weird.
The point is they kept using those two events as like a coincidentally similar timeline, and that happened in the middle of Teen Wolf. Derek had many plots after that that did not involve having a baby. If he had a baby, that would have been very exciting for me. But, you know, it sounded like he had Eli since he was very young. And, you know, Scott mentions, like, I haven't seen you since you were, like, 3. This is something that I feel unsatisfied about or need more answers about. I need to know the situation here. I need a prequel series to the movie. and yeah, like, so that's something that just, you know, like we said, it was going to, you know, we didn't think it was going to be, oh, Derek has just discovered he has a child and it's a new connection with the child. It's not that. He has raised this child and people in the town have raised this child. This is a child who has lived with his father for at least most of his life, uh-huh, since he was a little kid, which is so cute. But what the fuck? You know?
Yeah.
Scott's got his animal shelter. He's coming to Beacon Hills to raise Allison from the dead. Lydia's having her visions. She's coming to Beacon Hills to raise Allison from the dead. And they meet up with Malia, who's no longer dating Scott, obviously. And they're just like, this is awkward. Like, again, like, what happened? Yeah, okay, you were dating when you were 18. How long were you dating after that? Did you break up during the war? Like, why? How long has it literally been?
Yeah.
There's just a lot of, like, why these relationships are in their place that they are that we don't know. Same with Chris and Melissa. So a lot of the reconnections from people felt to me like I wanted to know, like, so much more.
Mm-hmm.
But one that I loved was the ongoing established relationship between Sheriff and Derek. So yeah. Selinsky and Derek. That was probably my favorite thing in the movie, the ongoing, like, we are now adult peers.
Yeah.
And and that was just so, so fun for me.
Especially Sheriff calling Derek his friend.
Like, yeah, I'm here to help your good friend, my good friend, your dad. I was like, they're good friends. That was exciting for me. But yeah, I guess who was the reunion or the first time look? You know, we also see the other established relationships like Malia and Parrish, which we don't know how they got together. We know that they're like, you know, Malia just wants to fuck him and he like thinks that she's amazing. We don't know when that got developed, but obviously it's been a while and they're people that are both still living in town, being residents of Beacon Hills. So who kind of, I guess, the first look at the people that we love, like who was the best first look for you or the best reunion?
So like introduction and reunion?
Anything. Okay. Either our first look at the characters or first reunion.
I definitely have a soft spot for Scott's introduction because you knew he was coming. You got that line from DN. You got the like pan up from his shoes stepping out of the truck to like his goofy little face. And like, honestly, if he's supposed to be depressed and lonely, like he looked happy and content in that moment, which he was doing his job, probably something that he loved. So I really, really loved that. That was very early on in the movie, and it made me feel like, oh my gosh, like I'm home. Like this is Teen Wolf again. So I did love that. I think best established relationship has to be Lydia and Jackson. I enjoyed every moment that they were on screen together. And I, like, you've always been a huge Jackson fan. He's never been my kind of character. I fucking loved him in this movie. He was
He should
perfect.
Have had so much more as well. Like, he should, like, he was definitely like a comic relief, which is like hilarious, but he could have had more as well, I think. He could have had, like, because he's like a, you know, resourceful guy. The question is answered. He's definitely like still with Ethan. Yeah. It's just that he's not allowed to come back. He's like, Ethan apparently is like, fuck them kids. Like, do not, like, that's not our life anymore. All that is pain. Clearly they had a really bad time during the war as well. But, you know, he has snuck home and lives in London with Ethan. Hopefully also Isaac. But I do think that, you know, we know that he has an established relationship and that he is a full-on European gay. and that's cool. Like, I think that he is amazing. And I always thought he was amazing. When we watched the pilot the other day, I'm like, I love this man so much. Like, I do. And I feel like this is the exact DNA of what he was inside earlier as well. But with, you know, they're clearly still close, at least in pen pal, you know, WhatsApp, FaceTime levels. So that's cute. But I really loved, like I said, like Sheriff and Derek. I would have loved more Derek and Malia because it's clearly that they, you know, she knows Eli, like she is very familiar with that. Like these are their family. So I would have liked more Derek and Malia probably. The Hale Auto Shop, like the Hale family business is the car yard.
Yeah.
Do you remember them ever having a connection? Like, was Derek mechanic-y? Is it like Derek is like, he's an advisor for the police with burning down things, but I don't feel like that's his full-time job. Given what we learn at the end about the Jeep, do you feel like Derek and Malia run that business together?
I do kind of feel that way.
That's what I thought too. I would have loved to see that.
So, yeah, so would I. And how,
like, we could have had an establishing shop of them both working on cars together and like getting a vibe of like their dynamic as cousins or whatever it is they are, and, you know, kind of like family and stuff. Maybe talking some shit about Peter, who doesn't seem to like hang around that much. Again, Malia, and I could have used more from Malia and Peter as well. I would have liked to see more. They don't seem like in that great a place, but it was funny.
I think, that's really interesting to me. I think that Malia and Derek would get along very well because they are not dissimilar people. And I think both of them would like to shit on Peter whenever they can. And, you know, is Peter working there too? Like, does he have to get his hands dirty? How's the Hale family fortune? Like, what's going on with all of that? And they reminded us of a few things throughout the movie, one of which was like, you know, that's no way to talk to your father. Like, oh yeah, like he's definitely her father. But other than that line, you really get no relationship between them. And I think that, you know, there probably wasn't time for it, but like that would have been good comedic relief, I think, to just have them kind of at odds a little bit more.
Yeah, I definitely would have. I think that it's realistic to believe that, like, they just have, like, that he doesn't hang around with them that much, that he really, you know, that they don't, that after all this time, they're still like, can you please shut up? But them two, Derek and Malia, you know, that would have been a really good way to get some establishing information, to have them like side by side working on cars. And it also would have been very sexy of them.
Yes.
So So yeah, I am curious about that, but I did like it, and it obviously also brings us into play. We've been like, why is the Jeep still in this show? And that is where the Jeep lives. The Jeep lives in Derek's car yard because of emotional reasons, apparently. And Eli is obsessed with stealing it repeatedly. And that's how we meet Eli, that he scales the fence, he takes the Jeep, and he goes on a joyride, and he gets pulled over by Sheriff Stilinski, who is both annoyed on behalf of Derek and annoyed on behalf of Stiles because of Eli continuing to fuck with the Jeep. So this way of introducing that was great. Like, I think that Eli is one of the best characters, to be honest. Obviously, he's new. And, you know, him having this familiarity with the sheriff reminded me of, you know, in the pilot, sheriff pulling aside his own son for his delinquency and stuff like that. Yeah. So how did you feel about, like, Eli having this obsession and, I guess, yeah, the Derek and sheriff dad best friendhood?
Starting with that, I really liked it. I really liked that, you know, Derek asked him to, like, scare him, potentially. And I like that Sheriff Stilinski's a good dad. Like, he had a handful with Stiles, but he's a good dad. And I think that you can see him taking on that role again with Eli, which I actually really enjoyed. I kind of like the Stilinski who's like, you know, I'm going to send you to, like, a juvie, whatever, and you're going to be in trouble. And I think it works very well on him. He carries it really well. Yeah. As for Eli, I really liked Eli too. So I've seen some people talking about how they feel like Eli is basically them trying to have another Stiles, which I disagree with. I think that they're very different.
And I haven't seen that, and I didn't think it once.
Yeah, me neither. I didn't think it once.
I mean, I haven't seen any other feedback from people who either have seen, you know, opinionating on the movie from trailers or have seen the movie at the premiere. I spoke to one friend who was at the premiere, someone who worked on the show, but I hadn't seen that, and I did not think it at all during the movie.
Neither did I. I think that Eli is his own person. He's got a little bit of snark. He's a little bit less deadpan than his father, which I really enjoyed, but he's got some good jokes. And I think that he's an earnest kind of kid who's dealing with his inability to change into a werewolf, a little bit of fear of having to do that, but, like, ultimately does want to be a part of this world. He felt like his own person trying to figure out, like, who he is with his dad kind of looming over his shoulder, or his dad's legacy kind of looming over his shoulder. Yeah. But he's surrounded by these people who really care about him. And I felt like there was a lot of love for him from these other characters, and him giving a lot of love to these other people as well.
Yeah, again, I really would have liked to see some with him and Malia, like, kind of face-to-face, but we do get the impression that he has, a lot of these people know him quite well, like Malia and the sheriff in particular. And the idea that Eli is not able to do his powers is, we talked about, you know, is this a werewolf puberty thing or is he stuck? He's stuck, and he's apparently stuck because he's scared of Derek. And that is so upsetting. Like, it's so sad, Karen, that, like, Derek, apparently ran into the house and transformed to protect him. And we don't know if that meant, like, a wolfy face or if we meant, like, becoming the full wolf. But apparently he is beaten, terrified by the werewolfdom. Like, as in, like, they kind of compare it to, like, someone who can't handle the sight of blood, even their own blood, that he can't handle shifting. And for his father to have enacted that trauma on him while trying to protect him, like, Derek must be so upset. Like, it's so sad. And that's one of the reasons I'm like, I really wish he hadn't died, because that feels like the kind, I get it. Like, on one hand, that is such a story trope for, like, you know, someone to just finally connect and understand only to like lose, especially like a parent figure. You know, it's very like Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker kind of. But like obviously Derek is not that evil. But even with people that are just like slightly at odds, that kind of true understanding and then dying. But it feels more like what should have happened is like an acceptance and healing and togetherness. And like if he doesn't have a mother, like someone else should have taken the fall. Someone else should have died for him so that Derek could have him. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want people to hate me for this. I almost would have been okay with Scott dying instead. Like, just in terms of like Scott does not have a child. Scott could sacrifice himself for the sake of someone's parent and child. They probably would have found a way to bring him back. But like I understand like Derek is going to be the first person to want to protect his child, but like everyone's just standing around letting Derek do it. Let someone who doesn't have a child to raise do it. Like I felt not good about it in that way.
I will say if Allison had to die again because of the unbalance, Scott sacrificing himself so that they could be together in whatever afterlife there is would have made a lot of sense to me. Yes. But I have two additional thoughts. One, Posey wants to do Teen Wolf too much.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think that they would do that. And there might be sequels depending on how people.
And I can see Hecklin having like a good relationship with the show, but being like,
well, that was like my other thing.
Heroic exit.
Yeah, that was my other thing. He's an executive producer on the movie.
Yeah.
I genuinely wonder if he was like, I'm coming back.
Sure he did.
I want you to kill me off.
I'm 100% sure that behind the scenes that is what happened, but I still don't love it from a story perspective for like if these characters were real and what they deserve and stuff like
that.
Like, I don't know. I 100% was like, Scott's not going to die because if there's going to be more Teen Wolf, it's going to be because Posey is like, you know, making it in the backyard with his phone camera. Like, totally. I understand it a lot. Sometimes the script is dictated by like what the actors, you know, are doing in real life. Yeah. And I'm sure that Hecklin was like, I love this, but let's give me like a really solid ending.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. But it felt bad. Not just because he's my favorite, but because it just felt like, I don't know. Like sometimes, like I said, that tropey ending of like the kid understands his father right as he, you know, dies is like, that feels like inevitable. Whereas in this, we had Allison, a character who I think in the balance should have died. And we had this relationship, which it was almost like the disconnect with Eli and Derek was. It was the kind of traumatic disconnect that deserved a second chance. It's like Eli is going to be so fucked up like now.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and I don't know. It just upset me. And not just because of like my favorite character or whatever. Like it wasn't because of that. But he did get to turn into a true alpha right before he died.
I know. That was pretty cool, I do have to say.
I would have liked to see him in his full wolf form again because I feel like that the Zen wolf is better than true alphaness, in my opinion. But, and then Sheriff talking about him at his funeral, like what he says to Eli about Derek and that montage of like all of the shit that Derek has taken for the sake of the fact that he was like so lonely and then so dedicated to protecting people is like, that was very upsetting, Karen.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just the way that he put it, like just something about the raw way that he put it. Like he said something like I've never seen someone like take the amount of like torture that guy took.
And then just intercutting that with scenes from the series, which they did quite a bit. They did that with Allison as well. And I found that very emotionally impactful.
Yeah, like Derek, you know, they cut and they, you know, they showed us the like, because yes, he has literally been tortured, but just the amount of times where he has like shouldered like crazy pain and just like all of these things in order to like be, yeah, who he is for other people. It was just like fucking horrific. Again, this is so not in order because we haven't touched the Allison plot, which we're going to go back to, but like, and that bit then when Sheriff gives Eli the car keys and he tells him the story of like, you know, your dad hated that Jeep and he had this complicated relationship with it. I'm like, I can see what you're doing. Like, as in like this, like that, it sounded so random, but I'm like, oh, that's his emotional support Jeep because of Styles. Like, as in like they're going to throw Derek a bone and the bone is like making Derek super emotional about this Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that?
I saw it too, and I think I just let it kind of go right by me because it felt like I wanted more explanation, more history with that. I wanted to know, like, that's the thing. We really, the 15 years or however long it's been since the end of season 6 to now is pretty much a blank slate. Like, we don't even know how long they were fighting in the war and what's been happening since then. And I feel like, although I'm fairly happy, like, you know, I really liked the movie and I'm really kind of excited to see everybody again, to see where they've ended up, but there's so much history, like so much has changed for them. People have broken up and haven't seen each other in so long that I'm like, this probably could have hit me harder if I had more information.
It made me think a lot. I definitely was like, I can see what you're doing. And I'm so curious about how people are going to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot, I think it was like, it worked for me because Lyndon has this way of just delivering lines that make them emotionally important, if you know what I mean. But yeah, when he was like, you know, when my son left, like, your father hated that Jeep and blah, blah. But, you know, when Styles left, he towed it in and he made sure it was working and stuff like that. And it's like, I'm so cute. Like, did Derek, like, I don't know, like, what happened? Did they get together and he didn't want Derek to leave? Obviously, Styles was with Lydia. Like, what is it like? Is he in unrequited love? Is it like, you know, obviously it doesn't have to be romantic either, but just that connection of, like, this person means so much to me, even though I really don't want them to. Like, it is a metaphor. And I'm so curious about how people are going to respond to it because I was not they also, it's like they needed to shoehorn in the Jeep. They needed to shoehorn a way for, like, why is Eli obsessed with stealing this Jeep? Why is Derek obsessed with preserving the Jeep? You know, they wanted the Jeep to be a factor, so they gave it this emotional plot where Derek has feelings about it.
Yeah.
And that means Derek has feelings about Styles. And it's so weird, Karen. I kind of loved it, but I'm like, oh my God, I do not know how people are going to respond to this. But yeah, that was amusing to me. I guess talking about Styles, again, this is all over the shop, which is fine. What about Lydia and Styles?
Yeah.
Tell me about this.
So I was kind of upset. Although I'm glad there was a reason. This is the one couple where we pretty much got a reason why they're broken up. And it's that Lydia kept having dreams about him getting into a car crash and dying. And so she broke up with him because if they're not together, then it can't happen, which is like logical, if not, you know,
if she's taking her, you know, visions as real. And right, it's also like she stopped using them. She stopped trying to engage with the power as well.
Yeah. So I was upset by it because Stydia was such a long time coming. That is something that the series as a whole kind of built up to into the last season. And it sucks to know that they're not together anymore, but it also didn't necessarily feel like
the end. It feels the like end. It feels like the resolution of what happened in this story with her, you know, having to face this as like her emotional moment to trigger the plot was definitely like going to be like she would come out the other side wanting to reconnect.
Yeah. I liked that they mentioned Styles a couple of different times. I liked that even though he wasn't there, it felt like people were still talking to him. Like, obviously, him and his father are still talking and they're still close and everything. But my conclusion, and I have a feeling a lot of people are not going to agree with me, is that I, as much as I wanted Dylan in this movie, we knew it wasn't going to happen. And I had already kind of come to terms with that. But I also felt like there was enough going on in the movie that I didn't really feel his absence as much as I thought I might have.
Because yeah, probably
everybody's
agree.
Kind of in their own place, doing their own things, dealing with, like, Lydia's dealing with not only, you know, breaking up with Silas, but, like, her own power and Allison, her connection with Allison. Like, it's not just all about Styles and the fact that he's not there. Like, she's got her own things to deal with, and I think that helped a lot.
I totally agree with that, and I also feel like I'm used to watching Teen Wolf without Styles there because the past couple of seasons didn't have a lot of him.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, like, I don't, like, feel like, I feel like people who are, like, hung up on that, I don't want to say you didn't watch the show, but, like, maybe they, you know, go back to the first seasons a lot and they're not actually that engaged with the three seasons of the show that didn't have, like, high levels of Styles in it, because I totally understand watching the show with him not being in every episode. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's... I guess it's also interesting to consider that this, again, like the timeline of, yes, obviously it's this big like behind the scenes thing that he wasn't in the movie, but a big thing as well is once they get to Beacon Hills, we're only looking at about 2 days of time.
Right.
They're talking in the beginning, like the FBI, should we call the FBI? And they're like, should we call your son? Sheriff is like, do not fucking call my son about this. And I think it's interesting. I think it's fine, in honest opinion. Yeah, it might have been different with him there, but I think it's fine. Maybe there'll be more in the future, maybe not. What else, I guess? We've got all of those relationships. Like I said, Malia and Parrish. I feel like they just wanted Malia to be sexy with someone. It's fine. I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
And it's also that they wanted to, like, clear the way, I guess. Scott and Allison to be an end game.
Mm-hmm.
I both liked them together in this and really didn't.
Okay. Why didn't you?
I think Malia and Scott were earned by the end of Teen Wolf. Mm-hmm. And while them breaking up sometime in the last 15 years is totally fine, I think that the importance of Scott having this first love with Allison and bringing her back from the dead and having this moment of connection and forgiveness with her is all well and good. I do not think that should equal she's alive and happy and now we're together and this we're going to get married. I don't think first love often looks like that. I don't know if Scott and Allison would have had that. I think that the reason that they are so, that Scott's so hung up is purely because she died, because it ended without his control. They broke up in the show. Like,
mm-hmm.
It was like it ended without his control. It's not the same as like him being, I'm still in love with you. Well, you're still in love with a 16-year-old who is dead and you are in your mid-30s. That's a stressful idea for me to consider.
Yeah.
Like, you're in love with an idea. You're not in love with her. And I don't know. On the other hand, I had forgotten how good they were together in mm-hmm. terms of, like, their chemistry and their vibe. I don't know, Karen. It's the kind of romance that I'm like, yeah, maybe they, you know, maybe this is a great way for them to reconnect. But it kind of felt like there was, you know, a bit regressive. Because he can't be in love with her. She's dead and a 16-year-old. Like, you know, it's kind of weird to me. It's certainly like I still, you know, I'll always love her and the idea of her and what we could have had is fine. But I don't know. I must sound like a buzzkill.
No.
I would have preferred her to die. I would have preferred them to have really emotional reconnection, probably kiss and everything like that, and, like, have this, like, great moment with the awareness that it was temporary and wrong and that she was going to die because she died.
Yeah. I don't
it's
think
fine.
You're being a buzzkill. I understand where you're coming from. I really, you know, the romantic in me really likes this idea that, like, his first love is his one true love. Like, I can kind of get past that. I feel like their connection in the show when she was alive, when they were together, was so good that, like, there's still a lot of that there. I think that it's very interesting to me that she has to deal with the fact that she's been dead and that she has to figure out what her life looks like now that she's back. It had not occurred to me that she's basically, I mean, obviously Crystal Reed looks older than she did in the show. So like her body is that of a 30-something-year-old.
Yeah, to be clear, I'm not saying like, oh, he's a creepy pedophile. I am not saying that. That is not what I meant. Just so everyone knows, that is not what I meant when
but
I'm like,
she
he's in love with 16-year-old.
Living like, at 16, and therefore when she returns, it's not like she has life experience or maturity having been dead.
Yeah, it's definitely a strange thing to consider the development of, you know, and Teen Wolf did that pretty well with Malia having been like a feral child. But obviously this is like the start of a journey for Allison, and that's all well and good. There were a few things that I was a bit confused about, like her. It's like when she came back, obviously she didn't remember who she was. She remembered she was a hunter who hunted werewolves, and she remembered her skills. She didn't really remember her father.
Yeah, that part confused me.
And, well, some of the information she had was wrong because she was like, I'm looking for the alpha, Derek Hale, and she didn't know Scott. In the show, Derek didn't become an alpha until after Allison and Scott knew each other. Derek wasn't an alpha. He wasn't the person who bit Scott. There's no way that the Argents thought Derek was an alpha. I mean, maybe they did, but, like, she also didn't know about hunting until after she met Scott. You know, she wasn't in the loop. So this is, like, a completely warped version of her brain. Like, none of what she has is correct, I think, intentionally. Because in the show, chronologically, she met Scott. She didn't know about werewolves. So she would have known Scott before she knew Derek. She certainly would have knew Scott before Derek was ever an alpha. You know, that the kind of order of, like, who she remembered and what their roles were was all scrambled. So it's also, like, what, like, was the Nagitsune involved in raising her? It must have been. Like, and it
yeah,
must have kind of given
say.
Her this warped idea.
So he must have, yeah, I mean, he probably gave her, I would assume, just enough memories to have her cause her own kind of chaos, which is going after different people, but without attacking Scott. Well, because he wouldn't have wanted her to kill Scott, because he wants him to die in her arms. So it's got to be the Nagitsune.
And the Nagitsune definitely has a role in mentoring Allison through the situation by appearing as her mother, which was one of the kind of surprise cameos, I guess.
I think, yeah, I got really excited about that one. That one made me, because, you know, we've met Edie a couple of times, and, like, she's so nice, and she was just one of the people on the show that I think we connected to most, and seeing her again and having no idea that that's who would show up, I just like, yay. I mean, her role in the movie was to try to get Allison to commit heinous murders, which is not good, but I still enjoyed it a lot. And the way that they switched between the Nagitsune and her and the voices and everything, like, I was really into it. I thought that they did a really good job cutting that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was into it as well. But the fact that Allison is being guided by the Nagitsune into all of this chaos is really, yeah, it does tie all together that, you know, the Nagitsune is doing everything, you know, and including getting her raised from the dead. That's one of the reasons that I think that he was involved in faking out the fact that she needed to be raised from the dead, because he was on top of making sure that she was doing the chaos, you know? So there was that as well. Yeah, I guess, like, what did you think of, like, Crystal's performance with the bow and arrow and the action and everything, the confusion, I guess?
I really liked it. I mean, you know me, like, fight sequences and stuff are my jam. I feel like they did some really good shots where it wasn't all just cuts. Like, you could really see some of the fighting. I think that her, like, anger was really good. I think that she did an awesome job kind of looking scared and confused, but determined, and just, like, deciding to set out on this mission she's given herself, or the Nagitsune has given her. I think her performance was great. And then when she comes back to herself, I was like, oh, yeah, this is Allison. Like, I remember her. And I really loved that.
Yeah, it's definitely, she was really good. Like, it's definitely a whole story that worked for me, even if I did think that she morally should have died.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Again, it could be, oh, Crystal Reed said she'd be happy to do another Team Wolf project, but Tyler Hoechlin didn't. Like, I get that sometimes that's how a plot works, but still, they can't just raise her every time, I guess. yeah, I mean, I think I just wish we'd had a bit more from Chris explaining his reaction, obviously, to her being raised when it becomes clear that he wasn't actually the one that was encouraging Scott to raise her, you know, mm-hmm. like just would have liked a little bit more there for Chris, Chris and Scott, Chris and Allison. What about Chris and Melissa? They, you know, Scott says, does she know you're here, to Chris? Like, as in they're both trying to hide from Melissa that they've come back to
yeah.
the hill. That kind of goes out the window quite fast when they have to bring Allison into the hospital. And I think that Melissa, when they bring her in and she's like, oh, my God, she looks just like Allison. And then she's like, Scott, why does she look exactly like Allison? That was like, ooh, that was very heavy. Like, that yeah. was just that urgent panic and also, like, what the fuck have you done?
Yeah.
Like, God, that woman's put up with a lot. Yeah, I mean, there are so many twists and turns here that it's hard to cover them all in order. Obviously, we've got all of that cute stuff with Derek and Eli. Derek trying to connect with Eli about lacrosse and being like, I was more into basketball, but I think I'm getting better
yeah.
at lacrosse. It's so cute, Karen. He just kills me. He just kills me. But yeah, the actual plot of what's happening is all a little bit convoluted. You know, we kind of learn that all of those arsons, you know, because they're dealing on the side with, like, who is burning these things so perfectly? And there's your answer. Like, why is there such a perfect burn circle? It's because of that chemical, like, being like, this is flammable and it burns fast and it burns itself out. And yeah. Jackson is the one to identify the fact that he's burning, like, groves of rowan trees to create mountain ash.
Yeah.
So were you worried that Gerard might pop up at any point when they said mountain ash?
No, I don't think so.
I suppose we know that obviously Michael Hogan has had a very serious
yeah.
illness and he's not working, but it did feel like, you know, I'll always think of him.
I know.
yeah. But, yeah, I guess the whole deal was with the Nagitsune kind of fence everyone into this area and kind of ping them out between reality and the void, all in the middle of the big lacrosse game.
Yeah.
So how was lacrosse for you?
Good to be home. Good to be back. it was, you know, we got an explanation for the stadium, which is that it's the college stadium.
Yes,
which
I think, was so right. I predicted yeah. it.
And it was a tournament, not a regular game. So that's why there were so many people there, which, you know, I'm glad that that all made sense. It, you know, coach has not changed one yeah. bit since Teen Wolf episode one, you know, like he looks exactly the same. He sounds the same. He acts the same. I really liked it. The fact that he put Scott in the game that, because we had thought that maybe Allison would have seen flashbacks or gotten confused, and that's perhaps why Scott was in his uniform, when in reality, no, oh,
he's
plays
straight
a game
up going to play the high school lacrosse
with
game.
With a whole bunch of high schoolers. And I was like, this is ridiculous, but this is the level of ridiculous that I expect from Teen Wolf. And
from
I'm just
coach, especially.
It.
yeah. And I loved Eli being like, you know, Scott being like, you were 11. That was my shirt. And he was like, oh, do you want it back? And he's like, no, but if you're going to wear my number, you better score the goal.
I know.
It was just like so cute.
Yeah.
And then
that's my best player, Greenberg.
Do you think that he was talking about Scott, or do you think that he's just been like cycling Greenberg through the series throughout?
I think cycling. Like,
or do you think that maybe he just doesn't know people's names and he just picks
well,
a new Greenberg?
He's
every
yelled.
Year?
I mean, that's probably very true, but he's yelled McCall enough times that I feel like he does know who Scott is. Like, he wouldn't.
Yeah, I kind of thought
up.
Maybe he could. Maybe Greenberg was like a fiction when he just needed someone to yell at. Like,
yeah,
and that like he was just using Greenberg.
And
oh yeah,
everybody
that's Greenberg.
All the time was like, Who the fuck's Greenberg? Literally nobody's name is Greenberg here.
Yeah.
But they just let it go because it's coach.
When he was talking to the other coach and he was like, of course, because they're like, who is that kid? He looks like he's 30. Of course, we think that he's talking about Scott. And they're like, no, that's just Greenberg. Maybe Greenberg is like a fake name that coach just uses when convenient for him. And that they are actually talking about Scott, but they're talking about that's my best student, Greenberg. Yeah. I don't know. It's very stupid.
I mean, he was talking about Scott in that moment, but I don't think that I don't think Scott has been Greenberg the whole time.
I don't know. Well, I don't know if coach, I don't know. Maybe they weren't. Maybe it was a fake out for us. Maybe they were talking about another student on the field who looks 30. Because I feel like Scott in his mask was like around the same height as everyone else. I don't know. It was just a funny little.
Yeah. We're probably thinking about this two-second joke too much.
That still fits. Like, you know, Greenberg had the number one trailer. Like he was the biggest actor on the set. Sorry, guys. Anyway, Greenberg aside, yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, all of the Derek stuff was obviously super emotional for me.
Mm-hmm.
He's super zen. He's a lovely dad. Him and Sheriff tag teaming on Eli in the school, you know, when Eli's been avoiding his dad and Sheriff leads him into a trap of speaking to his dad. It just makes me so sad that he died because he loves his child so much and is trying to connect with him and he never will get to properly. And Eli will regret that forever. And it's just putting a kid and a character like Derek, who deserve better, into such a sad inevitability. And yeah, I don't want Derek to be dead, but there you go. He's dead. The actual battle of everyone getting zapped into the Nagitsune zone, including Mason and, you know, everyone there was quite a few parts of that. It was so trippy. Again, with Hikari, a scene that was clearly, I don't know, either missed or like implications of here's the plan of how we're going to play it were missed, but like one of the big divine move that ends up saving Scott is that she lent him her fox in some way that like yeah. in some way that she put her Kitsune armor on it. Scott yeah which was like so cool, but I needed like half an hour more explanation on it.
Yeah. It very much feels like something they've either done before or discussed in theory before. I mean, this is something that they didn't spend any time on. And I think it was meant to be a surprise for us, the audience, because it definitely did take me by surprise.
Yeah. But if we talked more earlier in the movie about, okay, let's have a meeting. What powers can everyone bring to the table?
Yeah.
You know, like, not just like that. It could be something they've done before in the war that we never saw, you know. Mm-hmm. But everyone got kind of their big power moment, like Alice, you know, Lydia calling through the void to Allison, Parrish breaking through the mountain ash with his fire because Malia yelled at him. So yeah, I can see how that dynamic could work. Big power moments. Did you have like a favorite big power moment?
I mean, probably Hikari with the fox. I mean, that was really cool. And I just, again, want to learn more about her. I also need to shout out the fact that Melissa got to shoot a crossbow and she looked so cool doing it. I was so happy for her. I like that she was, like, involved.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was involved. It was a lot of people, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, I have a big power move that I was really, really happy about, actually. Okay. Peter using his number one resource, which is his nose, sniffing the ground like a dog.
Oh my god, he's so weird.
So ridiculous.
I can take Peter seriously. I think he's had some really great moments in the show, but in this they went full crazy crack.
I've known to light a spark or two. Like his entrance was one of the best ones too.
Yeah.
Oh,
they burnt a lot of people. Like, they did a lot of burning out of Wolfsbane in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There's so much. Like, it's hard. Like, obviously, we're not going through it in order.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other things? You tell me other things.
Well, Aiken.
Yeah.
That feels like.
I thought it was burnt down. Like, I thought it was totally gone, Aiken House. I guess it's got a new location.
It could be, yeah. And I was like, oh, we need a sequel. And you were like, no, I think we need a prequel. And I was like, I would watch that. I don't know if anybody else would, because it probably wouldn't have any of our characters in it. But, like, that would be such an interesting spinoff, too. Like, an Aiken House kind of jail sort of situation. What would that be like? Kind of like Suicide Squad, but...
I kind of meant a prequel as in, like, I want to know more about Eli and Malia and Derek running an auto shop and stuff. But
well, you responded to the Aiken House part.
Yeah. I think that Aiken House, obviously, you know, that's kind of a cliffhanger-y bit, maybe. I don't know. It's pretty fucked up. But, again, I think there's a lot of stuff from season 3 that they've kind of pulled the lore from in a way, I guess. And yeah, I'm curious about how many ideas are churning around, you know, that could actually be like, okay, we know what we'd do with this, we know what we would do with that. Yeah. That kind of thing.
I mean, we know that Jeff wanted a Kira spinoff at some point. Like, that had been talked about. I don't like the idea of, like, Hikari is just, you know, a Kira replacement, because I think that she's a very different person. But if that's how a Kitsune spinoff happens, or Liam and Hikari get their own little spinoff, like, that would be
cool. I think a prequel that involves Liam and Hikari's journey through the war with Monroe, and, you know, different people could come in at different times, Derek, Scott, Styles, you know, whoever, like, if people are kind of leading different factions all over the world, I think a Kitsune spinoff with Liam and Hikari, which had, like, visitations from other cast members,
mm-hmm.
could be a way to tell us a lot about the pack. That would be cool. I'm just trying to think if there's anyone, like, major that we've forgotten.
Well, I do want to say, when before we realized that they were getting sent to that other place, when Mason got chopped and disappeared into smoke.
Oh, my God. I thought he was dead forever.
I was so scared.
Like, oh, shit. And then they started killing, like, chopping everyone. And I was like, okay. But no, I fully thought he was, like, a proper casualty. Though they did find that other Kitsune who was, like, horribly murdered.
Yeah,
like, so
that was
at
awful.
Least he wasn't horribly murdered, like, you know. But you said it's okay if the deputy we don't care about dies. There you go. They gave it to you.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because when he first got stabbed, I was like, oh, shit. And then he got away. And then we see him again. And they bring the sword back. And I was like, please. Like, I felt sick to my stomach. And I didn't know I felt that strongly about Mason. But apparently I do. And I was like, oh, shit. Then he disappeared into smoke. And I was like, oh, okay. He was just an illusion. I didn't understand that he, obviously, we didn't know he got set somewhere else, but I didn't think that, like, that was really him anyway until everybody else got turned into smoke, and then I was like, oh, okay, that really was Mason. Something else is going on here.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, very confusing, but I think, you know, it makes sense on a second watch. Makes sense after watching season 3 again. Did you have, like, a favorite moment of the movie?
Ooh. I gotta say that my favorite moment might have been either the Divine Move, because that was just really awesome, but more likely was Allison getting her memories back, because it was very emotional. If you're a big fan of this show, it's hard not to look back on how far they've come, everything they've done, and realize that she is who she is again. And I think that they were so smart to put clips of the show in the movie, because it really just takes you right back to the beginning. And I really loved that. Because I will say, like, as much as this is a sequel to season three, I feel like the first three seasons of the show were very important to understanding what happens in the movie. Like, they do also reference season one a lot and the prom and like all that kind of stuff. Like, this is Allison and Scott's story, and you need those first three seasons as a block to really feel the emotion here.
I will say, despite the fact that I think that she should have died, I think like one of the best moment for me is actually, and I think this is actually before she gets her memories back, it's more than just the good vibes, when Scott actually, when she's like, why are you doing this for me? And Scott was like, because I'm still in love with you. Even though I just said a second ago, no, you're not. You're in love with an idea. The way that she is like pleased by that and like looking back and smiling, kind of like, oh, okay, like kind of as she walks away, her being pleased and kind of coy by that, even before she has the memories fully back. I don't know, that little bit of flirtation, especially like her reaction, was really, despite everything I just said about like how I think she should have died and I don't think that their romance is necessarily like sustainable, that was still my favorite bit of the movie.
I really liked that too, because it looked so much like Allison from like season one.
Yeah, it really did.
I love that. I will say probably another one that's very, very high up there for me is when he forces her to stab him and he goes, okay, you've killed me, now can we talk?
Because when they go through the woods,
everything
and stuff.
On the line to get her to come back to herself, like willing to kill himself in order to do that. And I was like, Scott, you're crazy, but I love you.
That was pretty intense as well, actually. Like I said, I loved a lot of the Derek moments, especially when he first appears with Stilinski. And it's just, I don't know, it was a very long film.
It was.
So, like I said, like, I feel like it could have been longer or divided into like three episodes or something. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of great individual performances. Like, even if I feel like maybe the plot or the edit was like not as clear as it could have been for some of the things they wanted to say, or like maybe the focus on like, you know, they had this big plot they wanted to tell, but they didn't get to tell like all of the stuff that maybe I cared about more than a new plot, which is like what's been going on so far. But the individual performances of like all of the lead actors were like so good. Like, Derek was the best that he's ever been. Like, Hecklin was the best that he's ever been, though I think he's really great in season four. Yeah, it was just really fun to watch them, I guess. Like, finishing the movie on Mr. Fenris, like Tyler's dad picking up Mr. Harris to take him to Eichen House, was definitely like an impactful button like on the movie. I was just like, oh, this could go anywhere. I don't know, I thought everyone was really good.
So do I. I feel like this movie was very ambitious. It tried to tell a very big, emotional, poignant story. And I really appreciated that. Like, I like that they went back to Nagitsune. It did not feel like a repeat of season three. It felt like something different because we're getting Allison coming back from the dead. And when I watch things, I'm just happy to be there most of the time. And I think I think that you pointed out a lot of really good parts where it's like, oh yeah, like I do wish that they had explained more about this kind of stuff. And I think that especially what's happened in between the show and the movie, like I really want to fill in some gaps there. So hopefully where that can happen.
Yeah, and if you could change one thing, like if you had to say like something either quite negative or like just be like, I accept this is what we got, but I really think they should have done X, what would it be?
Well, I know yours already because you said it a bunch. Allison dying and Derek
It's actually not. It's actually really? Not. That's not the thing. I would change context for Eli's birth more than I would change Derek dying.
Okay.
I think that is more important missing information from the movie than Derek dying. I'm not talking about like what I liked, like on what I didn't like. I kind of understand why Derek died. I understand like one angle of why that was the plot. But in terms of like, I think the movie is lacking this thing
that it really should have had is the Eli backstory and when he was when he was born and how that tied into Derek's story on Teen Wolf. Or they should have said that this was 20 years later, not 15 years later.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Like, yeah, I just don't accept Eli being an orphan whose mother died and that Derek was raising during the series of Teen Wolf that we never saw. And that's not, sorry, Jeff, that's not the acceptable kind of, like, fucking with canon that I can be like, oh, yeah, we're changing canon to say he had a baby. Fine, he can have had a baby during canon, but I want the explanation.
Like, yeah. Okay, then I will say my thing that I wish they had further explained in the movie is post-season six. Like, tell us what happened with the war, because that could inform why everybody is where they are now, why Scott and Malia broke up, why Melissa and Chris weren't really talking. Like, I feel like that could have gone so far as to driving them apart, why Liam was in Japan and all of that kind of stuff. Like, if they had set up that foundation a little bit more right in the beginning of the movie, I think we would have less questions by the end.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it is just those two things are like, stick another season between the end of season six and the movie and tell me about those things.
Or get your favorite writer buddy, Karen Rott, to write
a book. Novel.
Do a book.
You can work with Jeff to write a book prequel novelization expressing all of the plot ideas that they weren't able to include in the movie, but that they know in the back of their head.
Is there a person better suited for writing that than me? Probably, but
I don't know.
I'm up there.
Yeah. And then we could learn, you could write the whole Hikari and Liam. Yes. Leading the charge in Asia and falling in love and having a ramen magic shop.
Yeah.
But I think all those people had guns because they were in the Japanese mafia.
I think so as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fun too.
Two very minor things I also want to point out. One, opening title.
Credits. Oh, yeah, they were good. They were really good.
Gorgeous. Loved them. And two, Posey sang the outro song.
Did he? Is that what that song?
Yes, that was him.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. It was quite good. I liked it.
Yeah. Good for them. I feel like they obviously, you know, had a lot of fun making it. I am so curious to see if there's like a script of the movie before cuts, like as in like...
Yeah, we need to talk to some people about deleted scenes.
Pre-editing, yeah, deleted scenes and just like the whole original screenplay, like the finished first draft of the screenplay that like, here's like, look, this is like maybe the most negative I'll ever be about Teen Wolf, but here's what I think, in my opinion, it feels like happened. It feels like obviously they would have made edits to the script when they were like, this is too many pages. But it feels like then what they shot was like still too long and that there were like we just had to make cuts that didn't explain things, whereas if they had cut more in the script, they could have shifted information into scenes that they filmed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and I think that's a problem with like a lot of films and TV, that like when do you cut? Like if you cut in the script, obviously people want their scripts to be like as short and concise as possible. But if you film all of this stuff and then you cut and you're like, we have to cut this, but we're going to lose that explainer. The ideal thing would have been for that explainer to have come in a different scene. But if those cuts are made in the edit and you can't go back and reshoot, then you lose stuff. Yeah. And that is like the same with every single TV show and movie. This one, I feel like there were some things that were quite big that it would have been like better if the edits had come in the script instead of in the final edit. But I don't know. But it makes me want to read the whole script through because I heard it was really long. I guess we'll have to see. And if they had a time limit on how long it could be, they should have given them longer, like maybe another 20 minutes. Like this was a 2-hour and 20-minute movie, right? Marvel movies are like 2 hours and 40 minutes these days. And like, this is not a Marvel movie, but if it's only going up on streaming in Paramount Plus, they could have added another 20 minutes to it, I reckon.
Yeah. I mean, I would have watched more.
Yeah. Yeah. Or cut it into like 3 episodes or something, but they wanted to like promote it as a movie. So I don't know. It's a lot. I think that there will be deleted scenes, though I'm not sure. In the world of streaming, if there's never a DVD, how does that work? Do you ever see deleted scenes for like a Netflix show or an Amazon show?
Sometimes they add them as like bonus content. I feel
Amazon
like
Prime actually has like, they have a bonus content thing on their page sometimes. Yeah. I'm confused. Yeah, Netflix never does, but Paramount Plus, I have no idea what their approach to that kind of thing will be. So I feel like we'll see some more.
I hope so.
Well, I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now. So do you have any final thoughts on it as a movie first reaction? Obviously, this was all over the place. It wasn't like plot yeah. point.
I think I still, you know, I really liked the movie. It reminded me of why I liked Teen Wolf. My boyfriend was sitting next to me while I was watching it. And he said it was really cute how excited I was getting, because I was like cheering and laughing and clapping, and like my emotions were just so big because that's what the show means to me. And like, regardless of other people's opinions or like regardless of factually if it's a well-structured movie or not, like I honestly don't really care. It made me happy watching it, and it was fun. And that's what I care about.
I think that it will not be understandable to someone who has never watched Teen Wolf. It is not the kind of movie where it's like you can jump in and be like, I understand this story at all.
But you need that emotional backstory to it.
It's not a starting point for Teen Wolf at all. And I think that that's fine. Was never expecting it to be, but when you said about your boyfriend, I was like, oh my God, what does this movie look like to someone who doesn't know Teen Wolf?
Well, he's watched the first 5 seasons. Like, he's only got like a season and a half left.
With you or just like in his own life?
He started it because of me and because of this podcast. And he like kind of was like, yeah, by the way, I started watching Teen Wolf. And I was like, oh my God, tell me everything. And then of course he was like, because he is not a podcaster who likes to deep dive into literally everything that they watch, which is totally fine. But he really liked, I think, the first like couple of seasons, and then kind of fell off by about season 5. But I keep telling him, he keeps threatening to watch the movie before finishing the show, which I guess
don't do that.
Could technically, but like, I will not allow him to do that.
Fair enough. it is funny. Yeah, I'm sure that we'll think of more things to say, but for now, this is what we have said.
Yeah.
And it's really, really nice to see, you know, to see everyone. And I think the individual performances were so fun and like alive. And yeah, I am keen. I would follow Eli for longer. I morally don't think that Scott should have removed him from Beacon Hills unless it was like for a summer vacation and he needed a change.
Yeah.
It could be that they're like going to go back to Beacon Hills and live there or something like that, and that he's just like getting away from like the grief place for a short period of time, which is fine. But like, I'm also like, why did Malia not adopt Eli? You know, why did someone not move into the Hale family home with Eli? Like, this doesn't maybe Scott will, because like, it's just like, I don't know. The Hales are the people who, you know, based in Beacon Hills, and there could be quite a few reasons. It could just be like he's going to LA for a little vacation but you know, Scott seems to have gone back to his job. So I don't know. I was just like, don't take the child away from his school unless he is so traumatized that he needs a total change.
I feel like out of everybody, out of all of the options, Stilinski should be the one to adopt Eli.
Actually, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if legal if the family, choices,
yeah.
Right. But if the choices other than that were either Peter, Malia, or Scott, like, I'm choosing Scott because I don't think Malia's emotionally mature enough to raise a child. Right. Peter definitely isn't. He's way too murderous still. So, but yeah.
That's true. I think Stilinski could have taken him in. You know, it would have been a bit like, well, who, I don't know. We still don't know, like, if werewolves are functioning members of society with legal documents and stuff, which I think they are. Like, you know, I think they're just people. But what is in Scott's, what is in Derek's will? Like, how is is Scott legally allowed to take charge of Eli? Like, yeah, he says he's yours now, like he's in your pack. Okay, I get it, Derek, I do, but Stilinski is the one who should parent the child.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knows Stilinski well. I don't know. I'm sure that I would like to think that Scott is going to take him back to Beacon Hills and fix everything. But you never know. Apparently Scott and Allison are his mum and dad now.
So yeah.
I guess that's fine. I mean, Scott's just not going to neglect all his rescue dogs, so he might have to sort some things out in LA. But I would follow the story. I feel like it would be cute. And I think he was really good. I don't know. I liked him. I just wish I could have seen more of him with the Hales, really, like with Peter and Malaya and all of that. I suppose you don't have any theories about where he came from.
No.
Neither do I. Okay, well, for now, I think that's everything to do with the movie that we have got just in our first reaction. I'm sure that when we go back over it with a fine-tooth comb, we will find different things to focus on, like different elements of the movie, relationships, the mythology, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But I think that we've covered quite a lot here.
Yeah.
And like I said, like I think, you know, a really good next episode could be based in feedback. If people want to send us your responses to the movie or your questions to the movie, things you liked or things you wanted to maybe ask us. Obviously, we don't have the answers, but opinions. If you want to ask us about something we didn't mention, please feel free to do that and send us in a list of your questions for talking points in the movie and whether it's something you didn't quite understand. We could do a bit of research and see, you know, back into the Teen Wolf lore and see if there's like something that needs to be a bit better explained or whatever. So please keep in touch with us on NATW Podcast at Twitter and Instagram or Gmail or Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast on Tumblr.com. But until then, this has been Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast talking about new Teen Wolf content. For the first time in 5 years. So that's good. So, yeah, overall feelings, Karen, after this discussion?
And definitely more to think about, which I kind of knew was going to happen just because you tend to ask questions that I don't always think to ask. And I definitely want to go back and rewatch the movie. And I have to say, like, the movie made me want to rewatch the entire show again. It just does such a good job at like pulling that you back into that world. So we'll see.
That could be an interesting project for us to undertake.
Yeah.
At a later point this year that is not now.
Yeah. Too busy now.
Yeah. We'll see. But yeah, I definitely was like, my mind was definitely reeling back to the show a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely worth looking into. I think it might be cool to like look at also like what are the most important episodes of the show for the movie, that kind of thing. Like, what's the most important parts of the show? Like, you know, of what parts of season three, what parts of season two with the, you know, explaining Mr. Harris, all of that kind of stuff. Like, if you had to, like, pick 10 episodes to watch before the movie, like, what would they be?
Yeah.
That could be something that you guys tell us as well. If you're listening, write in and tell me your top five, top 10 episodes, or top three, whatever, of, if, you know, preceding the movie, what episodes do you feel like are the most important episodes? So, yeah, until next time, though, I've been Natalie.
And I'm Karen.
Bye.
Bye.